Welcome to Books and Beyond with your host, Alison. Join us for half an hour of information, entertainment, reading recommendations, and beyond. Brought to you by Auckland Libraries.
I know this girl, and she works in a library, yeah.
Nau mai, haere mai, kia ora, and welcome to our Books and Beyond Literary Lounge with Alison and Inika. Kia ora, Inika.
Kia ora, Alison.
Well, look, on today's show, we're going to be talking about what we've been reading, because we've been reading up a storm, haven't we?
Yeah, we have. It's been a big reading week. Yes.
Yeah, we've got a couple of those ahead of us. And we do have quite a good hot tip to share at the end. So, look, let's rip into it.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Sounds good. Well, this week I finished reading a really fantastic book that I can't wait to share with you. It was called The Final Revival of Opal and Nev. It's by a debut author, a US author called Dawnie Walton, published just this year, and you'll find it in the adult fiction collection. Now, our narrator of The Final Revival of Opal and Nev is Sunny Shelton. Now, Sunny is in her 30s. She is the first black female editor of a long-running music magazine that's well-known for looking back at the past of music and looking at the future of music as well. Now, her first big assignment as editor is to write a book about the legendary early 1970s rock-funk duo Opal Jewell and Nev Charles. Now, this is in support of their upcoming reunion tour. Now, I should say from the outset, if you don't recognise these names, it's because this is, of course, a fictional band, but when you read this book, you will believe that they really did exist.
Yeah.
And now, this book is the one that she's writing. So it's an oral history of the making and breaking of Opal and Nev's short-lived but lauded musical partnership. And it's told by the main players and all of those who are sort of in their circle. So Nev Charles is an oddball British singer-songwriter. It's sort of in the vein of David Bowie, but maybe not quite as cool. He's moved to New York City to sort of kickstart his career, which hasn't really started in Britain. Despite a few kind of misstarts, I suppose. And Opal is a young black woman from Detroit, and she has roots, her family's roots are in the South. Now, she has a sister, Pearl, who's in the church choir and very straight-laced, but unlike Pearl, Opal wants to get out of the gospel choir, and she wants to be anything but regular. She's really one out of the box. Now, her big break comes when Nev and his record label head go looking for someone special who's going to share the mic and spark up their stage. He's not really managing it on his own. So they end up producing a couple of albums together between 1970 and 1971, and these go on to be cult classics, but they then break up sort of spectacularly.
As you did in those days.
That's right. Now, in 2015, when this book is set, Opal is now hailed as an Afro-punk pioneer. She's a feminist, activist, icon, and a fashion provocateur. I can't say that a word. But she actually hasn't performed in public for 25 years, so she sort of disappeared from sight. And while Nev has had a very successful solo career with, you know, the obligatory private jets and a few stints in rehab and a string of forgettable ex-wives. Now, from the outset, we find out that Sunny's got a really personal stake in this particular story. Her father, Jimmy Curtis, was a drummer in Opal and Nev's backing band, and he had an affair with Opal while Sunny's mother was actually pregnant with her. So there's a sort of complicated backstory there. Now, Jimmy, the drummer, was he was tragically killed at a label showcase concert where all the different artists from their particular label were playing on one night only. There was a fight between fans of their label mates who were called the Bond Brothers.
Oh,
and
dear.
They're like a sort of a southern rock outfit, a bit like Lynyrd Skynyrd, with that sort of good old boy kind of attitude, and Confederate flags aplenty, yes, which of course is very triggering for Opal, with her roots in the South. So the kind of incident that happened has shades of that infamous Rolling Stones concert at Altamont, which is often called the end of the 60s or the death of the 60s dream, where a black concert goer was killed by Hell's Angels, who were hired as security is what they called it.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right. So Sunny, when Sunny's going into this, she is trying to produce this book for the magazine, but she also wants to know exactly what happened on that fateful night. And she's got to work really hard to gain the trust of all the different interview subjects who were there at the time, and to tease out that the truth, really. So, well, this book was just so my cup of tea.
Yeah,
I'm a huge music fan.
Yeah.
Now, for anyone who has read and loved Taylor Jenkins Reid's Daisy Jones and the Six, this one has got all of those vibes and much, much more, really.
Wow. Yeah, it's interesting because when you said you were going to talk about this book, I immediately thought of Daisy Jones and the Six.
Yes.
And I wondered if you were going to compare it.
Oh, definitely. It's definitely got that vibes because it's got the interviews, little, you know, broken up. You've got these really distinctive voices. It's got that sort of same, that pitch-perfect cast of supporting characters, and they all sound really authentic from that time. Mm. And, yeah, you can just picture them, really. But there's actually a lot more diversity in the cast than in Daisy Jones. I particularly loved the fabulous Virgil Lafleur, who was Opal's best friend who she meets in New York when she first gets there. And he is the creator of her distinctive and very fashion-forward look. It's got little added footnotes all through it, so it's got that sort of authenticity that you would expect in like a rock memoir. And it gives you lots of little details into their backstory, each person's backstory, and it shows off the fact that Dawnie's Walton's background is in journalism.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so it's really got that sort of authentic flavour. Yeah. It's as well as the kind of behind-the-scenes reality of that tough business of the music industry, you're also getting a look at that mythos of stardom from the fans' perspective, because Sunny is both a fan and a professional in the industry, you see. And Sunny and Opal are both, you know, really strong black women who are working within this white male dominated industry. Mm. So you get all these layers of the microaggressions that they are having to deal with, and all the kind of downright blatant bias and agendas that are running through that industry, right from the 60s when Opal first gets into the biz up to the present day. And the novel also has, at the end of the novel, you get the aftermath of the election of Trump, I should say.
Mm.
So that kind of brings the whole story into that wider context of American history, I suppose.
Yeah, it sounds very current and very relevant. And because I'm just thinking about the Me Too movement, and you're seeing so much coming out of the music industry
yes.
at the moment, aren't you?
That's right, that's right. And it's kind of layered even more deeply, more intersectional, I suppose, because
yes.
of Opal being a black woman in that
yep.
industry as well. It was partially inspired by that wonderful music documentary from quite a few years ago now called 20 Feet from Stardom.
Yes.
Yeah, which is one, it tells the stories of all of those incredibly talented black backup singers who were featured on so many huge hits in the 60s and 70s, and they didn't get any of the fame and none of the cash. If you haven't seen it, we do have it free to stream on Auckland Library's Beamer Film Service, and you can also borrow it on DVD from the library. Yeah, I really, really loved this book. It had that creative and transformative force of all those black music pioneers like Sly and the Family Stone, Betty Davis, and of course the unstoppable Grace Jones was really in my mind when I was reading this. And it celebrates black female empowerment, really. You'll be diving into YouTube and wanting to, you know, searching out, even though it doesn't exist yet,
yeah.
all the music and the costumes. It's got to happen on Netflix, I reckon.
Oh, yes, it sounds as though it would be perfect for that. You know, I'm wondering if we're going to see more books in this musical genre, or I don't know what you'd call it, but fiction inspired by music, I guess.
Yeah.
Someone's going to come up with a really good name for it. But because I was thinking earlier, you know, especially when you think that it's 50 years since some of those classic albums came out, like, for example, Joni Mitchell's Blue.
Yes, it's been in the news. Yeah.
Yeah. There must be so many really rich stories just waiting to be told or sort of improvised or riffed on, improvised on.
Yes, I think so too. I mean, there's such inspiration, and it was such a time of great change in music.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's
an expansion,
right.
I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And as you were saying a bit earlier, the appeal would be very wide, because when you think that some of those surviving artists, from back then would be in their late 70s now. So you'd have readers of that era and then readers much, much younger who perhaps are inspired or...
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, from their parents or their grandparents' music collections.
Yeah, and especially a lot of those timeless hits. And because I was thinking about some of the other books that have been written. One, was it called How to Kill a Rock Star? Or something?
Yes.
That's right. Greatest Hits, you know, Fast Lane. There's so many. I mean, I guess you could even say A Star Is Born, couldn't you?
Yes, you could. Yeah. Yes, yeah.
But that's the sort of thing we, I think we'll get a list up on our website.
I think that's a great idea. There's heaps to read that would be, I think, if you enjoyed this type of book, that you could, you know, dive into some others. Yeah, completely. Let's get a book list up of read-alikes, maybe.
I'll put that on my to-do list. No, but that one really sounds outstanding. Well, look, something sort of completely different in a way, but also examining, past and present, is a New Zealand book that we've both just read this week called Loop Tracks by Sue Orr. Now, Sue Orr's a Wellington writer, and I think this book, which has just been published, it's quite outstanding, I would have to say. It's a novel very loosely based on fact. I guess the way you describe it, I guess the narrative's pinned onto real moments in our history, sort of across the past 50 years, I guess. Although all the characters are fictional, and she's clear in that she's not telling the story of anyone
in particular.
In particular,
That's a good way of describing it. Pinned to it.
So the story starts in Auckland in 1978, and our main character, Charlie, short for Charlotte, she's 15 and she boards a Pan American flight from Auckland to Sydney to deal with an unplanned pregnancy. And this was at a time when the option of termination wasn't available for women in New Zealand. Probably a lot of people may have forgotten this or didn't know. For about a year in the 70s, so it was around 1978, I think, there were actually no clinics in New Zealand for women to obtain a safe termination of pregnancy. So they all had to go to Australia.
Yeah, that was new information to me. It was really a revelation,
And I was saying to you, I could sort of remember reading about it at the time. I was a bit younger myself, but I remember it being in the news at the time. And when you think about it, it's a terrible state of affairs. As I say, we start in 1978 and then we fast forward 40 years, I guess, and catch up on the life that Charlie's built for herself since that terribly traumatic time in her life. And now when we meet Charlie again, she's in her mid-50s and she's not had any other children other than the boy that she was basically forced to give away. And she's had the care of her teenage grandson, Tommy, since the time that he was a preschooler.
So, yeah, she never went on that flight, did she?
No. Something happens, and which means that what she thought was going to happen didn't happen. And it's explained in the story. And so she's been looking after her teenage grandson since he was a preschooler. And her son, James, has had a really difficult and sort of loveless life. The grandson's mother is dead, and James, the father of... it's complicated, isn't it?
It is complicated, of Charlie,
He's dumped the unwanted child on the woman who was not able to keep him.
It's quite circular.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Yes, and at times I had to think, now, which are we, a child, grandchild? But maybe it's meant to do that to you. So, and it seems as though she's just continually punished. The grandson is on the spectrum. He struggles with intimacy and change, and he's got obsessive qualities that are sort of mathematically brilliant, but also that really worry her.
Mm.
Now, mature Charlie, she's unflappable, she's careful, clever. She's really determined to do the best by all of those ones that she loves. And she's tough too. She's able to sort of protect her troubled grandson from his dysfunctional father. And she even supports him through his first romantic relationship, which is quite lovely.
Yes.
She is fairly solitary, but she's got a best friend, a woman friend. And then also there is some romance that develops, not with the Adele, the woman friend, I must say. But
later in the piece.
Yeah, later in the piece. So then, so much is covered, because then we end up in the pandemic of 2020.
Yes.
And then I sort of wondered, does she almost try to do a bit too much? Because then there's the election. We talk a lot about Jacinda.
Yes.
And kindness. Jacinda with just one name, not just by her first name.
As she is.
As she is, yeah. And then, of course, there's the end-of-life choice bill.
Referendum, yeah.
The referendum.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she really, she covers a lot, some of those really big issues of our lifetimes. I don't know, that would be my only query about it, is does she try to do too much?
She packed a lot into that second half, didn't she?
Yes.
With the, I guess 2020 was a full-on year.
Well, that's
so
true.
I guess it's reflective of that. Yeah.
Yes, that's true. And this, I mean, I guess we can hold all these concepts in our brains at once. So, I mean, we're looking at women's reproductive rights. That's been in the news.
Yeah.
Drug use, drug abuse, recovery,
yes.
End-of-life choices, kindness, loneliness, the pandemic, the whole issue of consent.
Yes.
It sort of is threaded right through.
Yeah, there was a lot.
There's a lot.
There was a lot in this book, and a lot of emotional touch points, I suppose, and entry points, weren't there?
Yes.
Yeah.
But I really liked it. I really, really liked it.
Yeah, I loved her writing. It was really beautiful, beautifully written.
Yes.
And there were some interesting ways of showing the way her earlier decisions had come out in her life.
Yes, that's right. It was almost a bit like a sliding doors kind of thing to me. I wondered, you know, what if all those what ifs, what if she hadn't met that young guy at that party
yes.
that night? What if the Pan Am flight had taken off on time? You know, what would have happened?
In her life. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, it's definitely one to get yourself on the list for. I really, really enjoyed this book, and yeah, I think that everyone should get into it, see what they think. If anything, it's absolutely a snapshot of life.
Absolutely.
In 2020.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good one. Well, look, something completely different. You know how I love a good crime novel?
You do.
I do. Well, and I just even love it more when I discover a new author. So this one is called If I Disappear, and it's by Eliza Jane Brazier. And it's one where the hunter becomes the hunted.
Mm.
So it's a story, I'm sort of laughing, it's about a podcast presenter who goes missing, and one of her devoted fans tries to find out what's happened. And so when I picked up the book and read the jacket blurb, I knew, I just knew I had to read it.
And it had to come on our podcast.
And it did. Because look at all these things. A very popular podcast.
Right.
Tick. Beloved podcast host, or plural, tick. But then host goes missing in suspicious circumstances. And it's like, what? So I thought, no, perfect, perfect. So it's an American book set in California. So when her favourite true crime podcast host goes missing, a woman who's quite adrift in her life plunges headfirst into the wild backcountry of Northern California and her own dangerous obsession. And she tries to find out what has happened to the presenter. So, and I love the name of the podcast, and the host is Rachel, and her true crime podcast is called Murder, She Spoke. I thought that's quite good.
It's good. It's very good.
And our young 30-something woman who's quite troubled and lonely, her name is Sarah.
Mm-hmm.
And she follows the clues have been hidden in episodes.
Oh, that's good.
Yes. And because we're planting clues all the time in our episodes, aren't
we? You just have to be really onto it and listen to every one.
Yeah, listen to them over and over again. So she ends up on the ranch or the farm where Rachel was broadcasting the podcast from. But it's very unfamiliar. But the more Sarah digs into this strange world, the more off things start to feel. And because it turns out Rachel, the podcaster, isn't the first woman to vanish from this ranch.
Oh, okay.
And she won't be the last. So look, it's really good. It's quite compelling. It's makes you feel quite uneasy as well. Very, very well done. It's creepy. How else could it? Yeah, it's eerie, and it makes you feel uneasy, and like a good mystery thriller should.
Yeah.
Now it's a debut novel, adult novel. I'm really looking forward to see what comes next from this author, because I think she's really good.
One to watch. Hey?
Yeah, she's one to watch. Mm. So that's another one to get your hands on it.
Oh, fantastic. Well, I recently, for my one of my book clubs, we recently read a 2019 historical fiction novel called The Island of Sea, The Sea Woman by Lisa C. The Sea Woman? Sea Woman. Women. One of those two.
Yeah.
Now, Lisa C, she's a quite a well-known Chinese-American historical fiction writer. And generally her books are set in China, or they focus on the experiences of Chinese migrants. Now, this time she has actually got crossed the Yellow Sea, and she's set The Island of Sea Woman on the South Korean island of Jeju. Now, Yong-suk is our main character, and she and her best friend, Mi-ja, meet as children. Now, they're close, very, really, really close, closest sisters, really, for a very long time. But then there's these hidden secrets that are happening in the background, and there's a shocking event in there when they have their own families, and this really leaves their relationship broken, and this is really what the whole story hinges on. So our story opens in 2008. Our main character, Yong-suk, is approached by members of Mi-ja's family. Mi-ja ended up in the US, and her family have come back from the US to track down Yong-suk. They want to find out more about how they met, what happened in their childhood, and also what ended their friendship. So she's pretty close-lipped. She doesn't really trust them, and she doesn't want to share with them what's gone on. But we get to see her own reflections on her life that begin in the 1930s and go through World War II, through the Korean War and onwards. Now, Yong-suk's family were poor but respected in their village, and Mi-ja was an orphan, and she lives pretty much in a state of servitude with her aunt and uncle. Now, she's really carrying a burden of shame from her parents. Her late father was a collaborator, collaborating with the Japanese who had invaded the island of Jeju. So she's lived in this kind of state of shame, really. At the age of 13, both girls begin the work of training to become fully blown hanyo. Now, the hanyo, this is a profession unique to Jeju. They are female divers who've been trained to harvest seafood and seaweed from the seafloor without any breathing apparatus, so they can hold their breath for upward of 2 minutes and more. They work in female collectives, and they're the main breadwinners of their households. Very unusual for the times, particularly. And they leave their families behind to work out in what they call the wet fields, both at home and abroad. So they actually travel in the summer period to China, Japan, and even to Vladivostok. So they're diving in freezing Russian waters.
Yes.
Oh, incredible stuff.
Mm.
Now, this is a true profession. It's a very dangerous profession.
Yes.
Tragedy strikes twice in quick succession as they are training in this in this job, and you start to see these kind of issues of responsibility, blame, and whether you can forgive people for issues and tragedies that happen in the life. And this is like a theme that sort of runs through the novel, really, the blame and forgiveness model. Yeah. Both the girls marry. They begin families of their own. Yong Suk marries a local teacher, and she stays in her village. She's quite envious of Mija. Mija marries a wealthy man, but her husband is not a. There's something going on with her husband. Like her father before her, he's a collaborator with the Japanese as well. They become separated. Mija lives in the city, and Yong Suk becomes more focused on her own daily struggles and on her family life. And she starts to really kind of detach from Mija. She becomes kind of unwilling to delve deeper and sort of find out what actually Mija's daily life is like and what she's struggling with in her home of relative wealth, yeah. Mm. Now, their relationship lies at the heart of the novel, but it's a book that's been meticulously researched, so it's actually a lot denser and meatier than you might expect from the initial outset, really. There's a really complex Korean history, of course, in the 20th century. Yong Suk and Mija's lives are playing out within the context of that Japanese occupation that went from 1910 until the end of World War II when the Japanese surrendered. Then, of course, Korea is split into North and South with Russian and US governing two parts or helping to govern. Then there's all this internal political upheaval and power struggles between, which are all kind of Korean-based, communist, anti-communist, military, police involvement. At the heart of this book is the brutal Bukchon massacre, which is a part of Korean history that's been quite hidden, both within Korea and globally. And this takes place sort of around the centre of the book, and it casts a long shadow over both families that has, yeah, really led to the situation of Yoon Suk and Mija's separation from each other. It's a pretty fascinating book, I have to say. Over the course of the book, you learn a bit more about this sort of matrifocal culture of the Hanyo. They're really respected because they have earning power and they've got freedoms above other Korean women, but they actually can't own or inherit the land. They still are subject to arranged marriages, and they're the main breadwinners, but they're also still carrying the bulk of all those traditional female tasks around the household. Very, very fascinating book. It's my first Lisa C, so I don't know how it compares to her earlier books, but she does have a lot of them. Very rewarding read, but it's not a relaxing read. So, you know, it's a weeper. It can be confronting, but it is really well worth your time.
Yeah. Oh, it sounds great. And you learn so much often reading.
I learned heaps from this book.
Yes.
Wanted to find out more and did lots of research after that too. So that's a good sign.
Oh, it sounds fabulous. Well, look, we've got a hot tip today, and it's for the cosy nights on the couch that you've been needing to have at the moment.
Oh, definitely.
It's a bit chilly.
Yeah.
So Auckland Libraries have a free streaming service called Beamer Film, and it just got even easier, didn't it?
Yeah.
What you can now do is search for films and documentary in the main Auckland Libraries catalogue, and if we've got them in Beamer Film, you'll see them come up on your search results, along with, you know, your old DVDs and Blu-rays. Mm. So all you need to do is click on the link that comes up, and you'll jump straight into the Beamer Film website, and you can sign up for a free account with Auckland Libraries, or you can log in with your library card and your password if you've used it before.
Yeah.
So it's really good, isn't it?
It's really good. Made it very easy to find your next great watch.
Yes, so that's one we really recommend people make use of during these cold winter days and nights.
Absolutely.
Well, look, that's probably about all we've got time for. Thanks for tuning in today, listeners. Take care and be kind to yourselves. Haere rā, ka kite anō.
This program was brought to you by Auckland Libraries. Find us online at aucklandlibraries.govt.nz and catch the program next Sunday at 9:35pm on 104.6 FM or anytime online at planetaudio.org.nz/booksandbeyond. Every day, every day, every day, every day.